Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I am joined by Marina van der Vleugd, from Woman of Salad, former MTV presenter. And this is a great chat. I guess I first saw Marina on MTV in the early to mid-90s and then was lucky to see Salah play many times, and was thrilled to see last year that a new album emerged from Salah. And we talk about all of this. But before we get on with the episode, just a quick thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Huge thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, when you finish listening to this, go and have a look in the archives, because you will see episodes in there with some of your favourite musicians, actors, artists, comedians, producers. Go and get stuck in, because there's some incredible episodes to be listened to. And as well as that, if you wish to support the podcast further from that, then I have a Patreon page where I put up standalone episodes even each week over there, and radio shows and mixtapes and stuff, and video episodes. So there's loads of stuff over there. You can find out about everything to do with this podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, let's get back to today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track with Marina van der Vleugd.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Beautiful. Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track. Sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom is Marina van der Vleugd.
Yes. Excellent.
Pronunciation on point. Wonderful.
We had 10 minutes of lessons beforehand.
How are you, Marina?
I am well today. Thank you very much.
So before we get on with the playlist of songs, I'm just kind of interested how you found the last sort of, we're 5 months into lockdown as we record this now. Is it five, yeah. Four, five? An eternity, it feels like. How have you found it as a human and as a creative?
Very good. Two very different things there. Up and down in both fields. So I have a kid and he's autistic and he's 12. And having him at home all the time, we decided to do anyway. By stroke of luck, 3 weeks beforehand, we decided to take him out of school because school was failing him. So we were already quite, we were prepared to have him at home. So that was a blessing. It wasn't like a real big, like, oh my God, what are we going to do with this boy? Yeah. So actually it's been a real blessing, because we are seeing him develop his own personality without all the stresses of school, which were really traumatizing him. So that's been a real plus. Not always easy, but really lovely to get to know our boy and his favorite habitat, which is home.
Wonderful.
You know? Creatively, it was really tough because we had to cancel 5 gigs straight away. First one was mid-March, you know, and the last one was mid-April, and we just shut down as a band. We were so, it hit us really hard emotionally. We're like, oh, I can't even get my head around doing anything creative. You know, everybody was saying, oh, I've got all this time now, I can write that book, I can, you know, do a solo album. We were like, I actually just want to cook, clean, and sleep. And
it's really interesting that you say that. You know, in lockdown, I've recorded so many of these with some amazing creative people. And nobody seems to be sort of trying to force anything. It's like, look, you know, you've got time that you probably would never have had. But is that necessarily the right time to go, right, now I'm going to write a book, now I'm going to write a new album? It's like these things aren't things that can be forced, right? It's got to kind of...
They can't be forced, and you really do have to be in the right mind. And there was so much to get used to, and it took about 3 months for us to get our heads around doing something again. And you can only do what you feel you're capable of. So the only thing that I felt I was capable of was doing some live listening parties on Facebook. I don't know whether you're aware of those, just to keep us alive somehow, and keep that bond going with the people that listen to our music, which otherwise we would have had when we were playing live. And that's been a real boost.
Yeah.
Also floors me for about 3 days afterwards, but it's been absolutely brilliant. So we've done about four of those now.
Yeah.
And you know, Bandcamp have been absolutely brilliant in sort of having no fee Fridays, yeah, once a month, things like that. And people still buying, and we slashed our prices last Friday for a day, and now we've got to go to the post office with like absolutely a meter and a half pile of vinyls and CDs.
I'm glad I'm not the person in the queue behind you, because I would not be liking you at that point.
You know what? I'm going to do it in stages. I'm going to do a few a day. Some lucky punters are getting theirs hand delivered if they live in either South or North London, where some of the other band members live. So they've got...
That's amazing.
It's been really fun. It's been all about connections, Stu. Human connection. I think we'll all agree that that's what we missed most.
Completely. And I picked up on that very, very quickly. And it's something that was really random, but I try and run every day, and just not far, but just to do just to kind of keep my body ticking over. And generally, if a runner runs past another runner, you're generally kind of acknowledge each other, whether it be a wave or a morning or whatever. And where I live, you don't generally talk to strangers, because it's quite a rough place where I live. Mm-hmm. And you know, even in London, you wouldn't walk down the street and you know, and start talking to random people, because it's just, unfortunately, it's not the way that our society is kind of built.
Not how London works. When you're in Amsterdam, it's different. And I once came back from Amsterdam on a holiday, and I started talking to people on the bus, and because that's what I used to, you know, and the looks I got. Anyway, carry on.
But then if you find, you know, if I go to the Lake District, or I go to, you know, some smaller villages, and, you know, on holiday, that the mentality is different there. But living in sort of, you know, kind of, I guess, you know, on the outskirts of London and in London, it's not the done thing, which, you know, is a shame. However, what was happening was not just the people that I'd run past, but if people were walking their dogs, even on the other side of the road, they'd been starved of human connection, and they would literally kind of wave or say good morning, which was lovely. And it was lovely them runs for so many reasons. Was not just the fact that random people were saying good morning to each other and acknowledging it and missing that interaction, but there wasn't any planes in the sky and there was no traffic on the roads.
Oh, wasn't it glorious?
And it was clear blue skies. I was like, this feels like, for all of the awful things that's happening, it did for a moment feel like some parts of the world were starting to reset. It just felt like it was a kind of system restore, for want of a... You know.
Definitely, and how we all hoped it would continue, not with the deaths, but with the silence, the quiet and the peace, and the not so much travel and people deciding not to take flights. But
yeah.
I think it's pretty much back to normal. I see people on holiday all over Facebook and Instagram in Greece, and you know, they had to have flown there. So
yeah.
Mm.
Should we talk about some records?
Yeah, gosh, it's been such a fun memory lane thing. Oh my God.
Good.
Very hard. It's on my desktop, so I'm trying to move it so I can see you and my text. Yeah.
It's meant to be hard. That's the whole point. And we're gonna dig in as well. So track one. What do you regard as the song with the greatest ever intro?
Well, I'm really glad you asked this, because the other day I heard this on the radio and I thought, oh my God, that takes ages for the singing to come in for this song. But I already know what it is and I love it. And where are the vocals? And so when you asked this, this had to be the one I answered with, and it's Sound and Vision by David Bowie.
Oh.
Because, I mean, I was really pleased that I could have a David Bowie in this set of questions, because, I mean, he holds a very special place in my heart. Doesn't he hold a very special place in most people's hearts? Because I was just wondering, when I was listening to Sound and Vision, how did he make his music work for us? Because, you know, you get so immersed in it. But it's so unpredictable and unconventional, yet familiar and makes sense. Because his music sometimes is funky. It's like, I don't like funk, but I like David Bowie.
Yeah.
What's he doing? You know, and yet he just makes it work.
Yeah.
And I love the fact, and I've watched a few documentaries on him lately, and I love the fact that he modeled his vocal style on Anthony Newley, you know, and he got away with it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, on paper, it shouldn't work, but it does. And of course, his charisma. So, yeah, I mean, the intro. Are we going to listen to it? I mean, are you going to?
What we do is we put a Spotify playlist together to accompany this, so people can go and listen to all of your tracks, and obviously we'll put Salad tracks on there as well.
Okay.
I think one of the, I mean, a lot of people have chose Bowie tracks for this question. You know, no one's chose Sound and Vision yet. When it probably would have been mine had I chose it, purely as growing up. Obsessed with synth pop and synth playovers. The moment that synth playover drops on that intro, it just takes it somewhere else. It's a glorious record.
It is. And Bowie, because I'm from Holland, as you probably know, and I moved to England when I was nearly 13, so 12 and three quarters. Very important to put the three quarters in there. And I remember it was very much like going on an adventure. You know, I was going to school, to a new school, boarding school, and my Dutch friends would ask me, so, you know, how does it feel? Are you excited about it? I said, yes, I am, because David Bowie lives in England. So I'll get to meet him. Which I never did. So.
You never did. I was going to ask. You know, through the years in this industry,
I did see him play live at Phoenix Festival. So that's as close as I got. I was right at the front. Yeah.
Wonderful.
He's still at least like a god to me.
There was some stuff on the iPlayer about a month or so ago about Bowie, and I've probably watched 100 different Bowie documentaries, but if one comes on, I'll watch it again, and at the end, yet again, just go into just this huge, like, rabbit hole of watching Bowie on YouTube, and it's just, you know, and I think what's so good about it as well is the fact that he did put out some duff records, you know, but it didn't stop him progressing and, you know, evolving, you know, whereas, you know, I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan, but you know, the Stones have a formula that works, and they don't really move too far from that formula, I think, especially in the last, you know, 20
years. With a lot of bands.
Yeah. Whereas Bowie starts messing with drum and bass and, you know, and does Tin Machine and, you know, critically wasn't well received, but it never stopped him going, right, for the next album, I'm never just going to go and, you know, I don't want to make another album I've already made. I think that's an artist.
Even the music that was successful didn't have a formula. And he just sprinkled magic into his music. Listening to Gail Ann Dorsey talk about how he never had a plan about a track, but he would just eke it out of the musicians that he was working with, and would encourage them, and would listen to what their contributions were, and would, you know, he was like a director of music. I appreciate that in an art. That's what making art is. You know, some artists have a concept and then they try and create the concept that they have in their head. And others are like Michelangelo, where they have to, you know, clip away, knock away, chisel away at the marble until the sculpture appears. Yeah. Lots of ums. I want to not say anymore.
I never listen to my podcast back from fear of like going into like a different realm of on the ermometer, if there's such a thing, because there's plenty of erms. It's all right. It's podcasting.
You don't edit. There's no editing.
No,
I can't. Can you edit this bit out, please, Stu?
okay. Track two.
Good to know. No, you don't have to. It's fine. Back to what? Yeah.
I want to know the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Well, this could only be one song from 1977, so a year before I came to England, and it was We Are the Champions by Queen.
Okay.
And consequently, the whole of the album News of the World. I was absolutely, and I do, this was my first record that I just fell in love with. I would say definitely this and Freddie were my first loves in music. And I was in Holland and my English wasn't great. I hadn't, you know, but even though my English wasn't brilliant, I knew intrinsically, you know, what each song was portraying emotionally. And I would be found, I have a picture of it somewhere. I should have, and this is a podcast, so there's no visuals, but I do have a picture of me sitting against my dad's hi-fi unit, you know, big white bookcase, you know, me sitting on the cold flagstones in front of it with these big hi-fi headphones, listening to News of the World. And he had the Stones and Pink Floyd and the Beatles, but News of the World was it for me. And that's what I would do after school. And I would study the lyrics, and yeah, that was it. We Are the Champions did it for me and still does.
What would that emotion have been?
Oh, just another world. Not that my world was bad. I mean, I had a pretty good childhood. And you know, I was not wanting for anything. Just building up my own identity, you know, and this was not influenced by any friend or any boyfriend or anyone on the TV. And it was simply my own decision that this was amazing. It was the storytelling. It was all the different genres, although I didn't, you know, now I know about that, you know. There's hard rock on the album. There's ballads. There's songs that could fit in a musical in the West End, you know, on the West End stage. I was just enthralled by the storytelling, I think, and by the melodies, and that was it.
Would you sort of deconstruct it as well? Was music something that you'd obsess over as well?
No, I've never obsessed over music. I obsess more over the personas that the people portray as musicians, as I was really into musicals as well. There was a Dutch musical called Foxtrot, which was about the war in the 1940s. My dad is still an actor, and I was really into being a performer. I was very, very precocious at school. You know, I wanted to be the center of attention, but also didn't have that many friends because I lived too far away. And I knew I had some kind of charm, you know, and I was just all about performance, which is why I think Freddie and Queen was so interesting to me. And the other record, which I could have mentioned, was Ravel's Bolero. That was the other record that was my first ever vinyl that I got bought for Christmas, or Sinterklaas, as they call it in Holland, because we studied it at school. But then, of course, 10, you know, the film 10 kind of ruined that for me.
Yeah, that'll
happen. Yeah.
You mentioned you was precocious and you loved the tension. Mm. Were you confident, though?
Yes, I was. I really was, because I had been given the idea by my dad that I was a princess and I could achieve anything I wanted to, you know. And that confidence, you know, sort of got knocked out of me when I started going to boarding school in England and had to start a whole new life and didn't know the language, but not really. I mean, I had to start all over again, you know. But I was always swanning around and dressing up and putting makeup on and wigs and whatever. Yes.
Well, that fits nicely for track three, which is a song that reminds you of your time at school.
Well, I couldn't just pick one because my school days in England, I had to go with my school days in England, which was between 78 and 83.
Okay.
So I couldn't just pick one. There was no way. But so I went for the, I wanted to talk about the tracks that I visually remember putting on the record player in the dormitories because I was at boarding school or the study units. And it, you can pick which one you want to talk about, but it's Spandau Ballet, to cut a long story short, Human League, Don't You Want Me, Duran Duran, Planet Earth, Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi's Dead, Madness, Baggy Trousers, The Cure, Primary, and Heaven 17, Penthouse and Pavement. So it was either New Romantics or post sort of punk, you know.
I mean, you've just...
And the Stranglers as well. Stranglers, yeah, the album, Rattus Noveg, whatever, however you call it. I mean, so if I choose one, yes, what were you going to say?
You've just rattled off some incredible records there. Yeah. I wouldn't know which one to choose.
Oh, well, I might have to choose The Cure. Oh, no, I'm not going to choose The Cure because my next one's The Cure. Your next question is The Cure. So I think I'm going to have to go for Heaven 17 and... Fascist Groove Thing or Penthouse and Pavement, basically the whole album, because again this was so sixth form, and suddenly I had a study unit. In the sixth form you had a study unit where you studied, and I was in with the really cool boys from a year up from me, and they were in a band together, and they were listening to Penthouse and Pavement, I think. No, they weren't. I asked to borrow their record player so I could glue myself to their headphones and listen, do no studying, just listen to Penthouse and Pavement. And when it came to Christmas, that's right, it was somebody else's record. When it came to Christmas, I put notes all around the house saying, Morena wants Penthouse and Pavement for Christmas. Like 10 notes all over the cottage where I live with my mum. Yeah, and then the nice thing about the records that I've just reeled off is that I did end up meeting most of the people involved in those bands in the last 25 years, you know?
I mean,
that's very cool.
For somebody that liked...
Oh, and the Specials are in there as well. Sorry, carry on.
You've literally said all the bands now. Is there anything left now?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, you mentioned, and it's a term I love, I don't hear very often, you enjoyed swanning around in wigs and stuff. That period of music, whether it be the kind of darker, you know, gothier shades of Bauhaus and Cure and Stranglers and you know, post-punk kind of thing, or even the New Romantic side of things, you know, with Heaven 17 and Duran and stuff. And all of that was so colourful and so ridiculously over the top in very different ways. Did you throw yourself into all of that?
Well, the boys I was hanging out with did. So I have a vivid memory of standing in the lunch queue with Fergus, who was wearing, you know, a really frilly white shirt, and no one else was. And I said, "What is this?" He went, "Don't you know? It's the new thing. It's the New Romantic look." I went, "Okay." And I ended up going out with him for a while, because what women do a lot, girls do a lot, they get influenced by the music their boyfriends are listening to, you know. So a lot of this is boys influencing me. What was the question?
It was just something that reminded you of school.
The other thing, oh my God, I'm talking about it now. So much comes up. Did I really dress up? You know what? Yes, I think I did. I had like really short black and white, kilt skirts and things like that, but it was school, so even though I didn't have a uniform, I couldn't completely just be You're getting me right down memory. What I did was I dyed my hair. That was it. I had never had my own color hair. It was either pink, red, blonde with black bits. I looked like a German shepherd. that's how I express myself. Earrings, perspex, bright pink and bright green earrings. That was the look, basically, the new romantic look. And then I had leather jackets. I was just a kid, you know, in this era. I think everyone would have been doing the same.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. How was it being a Dutch girl that, you know, was learning to speak English suddenly in a boarding school in England? How was that?
Well, it was an adventure. It was incredibly exciting to me, you know. Later on, I think I probably suffered quite a lot of psychological trauma because basically I was taken away from my dad, not in a malicious way, but I was living in a different country from him from the age of 12. And I missed him. I still do terribly. He's 86 now. But I learned to speak English very, very quickly because everybody was like the cute little Dutch girl in dungarees and kickers and a little floral Laura Ashley shirt, because that's how my stepmom had dressed me, not knowing that that was the exact uniform that would mean you could be part of the trendy gang, you know. So very lucky. And so everybody taught me swear words. First thing, Jesus Christ, you know, that was my swear word. And I had a little half penny swear box. And every time I said Jesus Christ, I have to put a little penny in there. So I was taken under everyone's wing because I was so cute and Dutch and had the Dutch accent, you know. It was a big, big adventure. And I was there for 5 years and it was a very creative school. Again, you know, I am not a musician that's come from a poor background, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, people don't like that because, you know, you're supposed to have suffered as a kid if you're going to be an artist. Well, I did suffer emotionally because I was taken away from my dad, and my mom married a man who I was never keen on. So, you know, that's tough. And I was at boarding school. I wasn't even at home.
I think it's a cheap shot to dig out, you know, artists that may have had more privileged upbringings than others. But it's not their fault. It's just you're just born into what you're born into, aren't you? And like, you know, you can't do anything about it. And yeah.
And I was born performer. My dad is a performer, you know, and my sister is a performer. My other brother's a performer. They're musicians. They, you know, it's just, it's in the blood.
And so what did you want to be when you was at school?
I wanted to be famous. How crap is that?
You certainly won't be the first, and you're certainly not the first, and you won't be the last to say that to that question on this podcast.
Yeah. So when I left school, I just found my way to fame in whichever way I could. And being a performing type anyway, it was just easy to work my way through all the different things that, and because I was good at it, you know, I was all like, you know, ta-da, here I am. Whether you like it or not, you're gonna like me. You know,
I mean,
very, very driven. And you asked earlier whether I had confidence as a kid, and I had a lot of confidence even into my early 20s. Because I was naive confidence. And things seemed to work for me. My first performing role ever was still at school, and I should have mentioned this track, but it was, we put on the Rocky Horror stage show as the leaving performance, the sixth form, you know. I sung, I was one of the waitresses that sings, oh no, not waitresses, the cinema girl, you know, with the ice cream that sings at the very beginning. That was my very first singing thing. And then I also choreographed the chorus, there's two different groups of dancers, and I choreographed them, and I was all dressed up in suspenders and things. And it was just, I was just felt at home. Where were we?
I'm also interested in, you said that the school was quite creative as well. So all of the things that you hoped to pursue and you was, you know, into, was that actively sort of encouraged at the school you went to?
Very, very much so. Yeah, it was co-educational, no uniform, very much focused on the creative arts, but also on Oxford and Cambridge. So, and, you know, I could reel off names of people that went to that school, but I don't know whether that will benefit me at all, whether it's interesting. But I think my parents saw something in me and thought, we can't just put her in the basic state school here in Holland in this village. You know, she needs something a little bit more where she can be free. And I suppose they did the right thing. But, you know, emotionally, I was very lonely. And it took me a long time to understand how to look after myself, because nobody had nurtured me from the age of 12 to 17. And then I left home at 18. I hadn't been nurtured.
Would you change that in hindsight?
Would I change it? Yeah, I would never put my own child in boarding school.
Yeah.
Never in a million years. No, never. Because you need to be at home with your mum and dad, or your mum or your dad. And my son has two homes. Which is, you know, of course not ideal, but it's better than living in a warring home. Mm-hmm. So your question was, what did I want to do? I wanted to be famous because I needed the universal love that I hadn't been nurtured.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. I've said this before, and I haven't got a new story. You know, this is, it just is what it is. I'm not that person anymore.
What was the first record you bought?
It was The Cure, Killing an Arab.
Oh, so, what a record.
I waited outside the record store for it to open. In Dorking, in Surrey, which is where my mother lived. I say my mother lived. I lived, but, you know, I went to boarding school, so yeah.
So as you grew up, did record shops become kind of places that were important to you? Would you hang out in them?
No, because, again, I was into music as a personality thing. I wasn't into music because I loved music per se. I was into music because it created my persona, and it was the music that would be, you know, played in the homes of the boyfriends that I had. I was really very self-obsessed, and I was just into me and into trying desperately to write those English essays, trying desperately to be, you know, good at maths. And I was much better than, you know, my exam results showed. I was just into being a silly little Dutch girl. So music, I never knew I was going to be a musician until I met Paul Kennedy. It was just not on my radar. Although I was a pianist and I had piano lessons and I got to about grade 5, but again, I didn't practice. I didn't have any discipline, again, because I wasn't nurtured. So no, you want me to say I'd hang out in record shops, but I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's not a common answer. I know that, you know, some people found sort of, you know, solace in them places, leafing through records and that. For track 5, the song that soundtracked your time clubbing.
Yeah, interesting question. I didn't go clubbing. I didn't like clubbing. So, but the one band, the one song that came close to that was Soul to Souls, Back to Life, 1989. I was already making music with Paul as the Merry Babes, which is the band that precursors Salad. And we were hanging out in our house in the Finchley Road, above a shop. Seven of us living there, seven art students in a house above a shop. You can imagine the havoc. Oh my God, it was the best time of my life. Parties, the makeup, the flares, the silver flares I made, the orange with Diamante eyelashes. And I'm just talking about one particular party and an orange cake we made. But anyway, my friend, my best friend Alice, who's still my best friend, we lived in a room together. She popped her head around the corner of the door while Paul and I were working on some music. She said, "Hey, you guys, I really want you to hear this band. They're called Soul to Soul." We're like, not for us. Not into soul. No, come on. You know it's better than that. But really, it's really great. And so eventually we were forced to listen to Soul to Soul album, and we were immediately hooked. So that would be my clubbing record, because I didn't go clubbing.
I mean,
but their album was called something with clubbing.
Club Classics.
There you go, Club Classics. So I think it's a fair answer.
It's a great answer.
I was not part of the Summer of Love. I never liked clubbing because you can talk to people. I hate small talk. I cannot abide small talk. And that's all you could do in club.
I've been a club promoter for 30 years, and it's very, very strange. I've had some incredible people come and DJ at my clubs, and I've got so many things I'd like to talk to them about, but I can't do it because I'm in a really noisy environment, literally leaning into their ear, shouting, and it's not conducive to, you know, anything other than, as you say, small talk, and that's a shame. But I think if you're going to pick a record from that era that soundtrack not just the club scene, it soundtracked every car stereo that drove past me then, was that Soul to Soul beat, you know, that you heard on Keep on Moving, that you heard on Back to Life. It was, you know, that hot, just what Jazzy B come up with at that point was so British as well. It you know, there was so much kind of, you know, soul and R&B music coming over from the States, yet Soul to Soul, there's something that sounds very London about it.
Well, his accent, I don't know whether you've heard of the family, Mark Le Bon and James Le Bon, but that he reminded me very much of them because of the way they talk. They had really deep voice, you know. I mean, you know, can't get more London than that. He didn't Americanize, you know.
Absolutely.
His vocals, his talking.
And Karen Wheeler, like her voice, her vocals, just stunning, absolutely stunning. Okay, track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Yeah.
Where are we going here?
Well, exactly. Where do you think we're going? We can either go 1975 or we can go 2019.
Let's do both.
Okay. 1975, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi by Pussycat.
Mississippi.
And the girl has got red hair, strawberry red hair, strawberry blonde. She's got a big gap in her teeth. And that's all I can remember. Yeah, yeah, Pussycat. The band is called Pussycat. And the song's Mississippi. I also could have gone for the band that did Venus, Shocking Blue.
Yep.
You heard of them?
Of course. What a great
record. But I didn't go for them because I didn't know about them until a year ago or so. Mm. But the 2019 is Pip Blom, I Think I'm in Love, which is an excellent, excellent record. And even though it's quite derivative of the lo-fi sort of music scene and Nirvana and Pixies and Breeders, it's not doing anything new in that respect. However, it is genius. Everything is perfect, you know, about this song in particular. Just really, really... And I'm so proud that they're Dutch.
Well, you touched on some of the kind of lo-fi and alternative music from back in the kind of, you know, early to mid-90s. And that was when I first became aware of who you was. And seeing you on TV and stuff. And then seeing Salib many times.
Thank you.
How was those, you know... That those years in the, you know, early to mid 90s?
It was an incredibly exciting time because I was basically fulfilling my dreams. I was a fashion model. I started that in 1986. I tried three times, third time lucky, you know. Nothing could stop me. Self-obsessed. Then MTV came along in 1991. And suddenly I had the fame that I'd always, you know, needed, I thought. But all along, I was making music with Paul. So the seemingly superficial sort of jobs that I had, the modeling and the TV presenting, underneath it was making music with Paul. And I went out with him from 85 to 88. So it came from a really safe place. So I was making this music with my boyfriend and then my best friend, and I felt, and we knew we had something to show the world. I mean, ridiculous confidence and arrogance, really, but you need that if you're going to get anywhere.
If you haven't got that in a band, then
My painter and decorator, we've got scaffolding all outside, and he just came in to help me with something. He saw my big Salib poster for drinking. He said, "Is that you?" I'm like, yeah, 25 years ago. And he went, "Blimey, I was in a band, but, you know, there's so much competition." And I was like, yeah, there is. The only way you're going to do it if you just feel you've got it, you know. Anyway, so those early 90s was heaven for me because I was at art school, and I left art school in 86 because I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. I had no confidence in terms of making art. I was confident in myself as a person, but I didn't know what the hell to make art about. And so I left film school after a year because I suddenly had the opportunity to be a model because I felt, you know, if I'm going to make art, I need to live. I need to live. I haven't lived.
I just want to ask you something at this point then. So you was at art school but didn't feel like you was kind of competent of what you should be doing, and you said when you was when you got into fashion modeling, it was the third sort of strike at it. Have you ever sort of had like that sort of, you know, do you ever suffer and still do you ever suffer with like imposter syndrome?
Yes, of course. But only happens once you become successful. So first you push and you push and you push and you're the underdog and no, you know, you say I'm no good, I'm going to show you. And then when you suddenly break through and everyone goes, wow, you're so good, you go, oh my God, am I? Oh, I don't think I am. When are they going to see through? I mean, that is the classic. That is the classic. And also my son is autistic, and I've obviously researched a lot of the autistic spectrum, and I'm probably very, very close, not quite, but very close to having Asperger's myself, because I can recognize Like if somebody praises me for having done something good, suddenly it's a real demand. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do it again. Shit. You know, and then you fuck up. Sorry, is it 9 o'clock?
It's fine. It's fine.
And then you fuck up because the pressure has just become too much. My son has pathological demand avoidance, and that is just the demands of everyday life and what other people expect of you are just too much, and you just fight or flight and you run away and you melt down or you just shut down. So I probably have a few traits of that as well. Yeah, imposter syndrome, for sure. I have to say less now. Lockdown has done an awful lot for me feeling like, you know what, you can only do one day at a time and you can only do your best. Having a son with autism, same deal. Your perspectives change, your priorities change. And I'm grateful because that is the real stuff. That's the real deal. I remember when Salad broke up in 1998, I was really quite pleased to get to the back to the real world because I'd missed it. I needed to live in the real world to get my feet back on the ground. I liked it, you know, but I still needed a bit of pizzazz. So I was glad to be back.
Well, for the last song, you get to pick a track and play DJ. So I want to know the song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, I'm afraid I picked one of our own.
That's all right. You won't be the first to do that.
Is that allowed?
Of course it is.
Because in 2016-17, when Paul and I came back, just the two of us, we were called Salad Undressed. And with Donald, who's now our drummer and our old producer from the 90s, we made an album called Good Love, Bad Love. And even though I say so myself, I think it's a classic. The nostalgia has already set in for the recording of it. We recorded it for a year of Mondays, because that's all the time that we had, that we were all free, the three of us. And Donald was living in an absolute shithole on Westbourne Park Road in Notting Hill, in a basement. I hated it, but I just gripped my teeth and got on with it because I knew that we were onto something good. It was just on a laptop, and a year of Mondays gave us Good Love, Bad Love. And the song that I would really like to play from that is called Nowhere Near.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so as we find ourselves coming out of lockdown, it appears to be happening, what's the plans? What's coming up?
We are recording, but remotely. Donald has got like a studio set up somewhere in an abandoned house where Paul can go and social distance record vocals and guitar, because he's got a wife who's at risk at home, so he's really being careful. Charlie's also not keen on meeting up anywhere. We just need to rejig our live stuff. We haven't really gone there. I think we should have, because I think maybe all 2021 is already booked up probably. I think new recordings is what's happening. Paul is doing a solo record called The Kennedy Corridor. I'm supposed to be doing a solo record, but I'm kind of busy homeschooling and doing a move. I think I'm going to move to Brighton and be by the sea. Yeah. Good for my son. He needs a life. He hasn't got one here. But for Salad, it's just recording. I think we'd like to release like one track a month and set up a mailing list and see what happens. It's never going to go back to normal. So we need to think outside the box.
Totally.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute delight listening to you talking about records.
Oh, thank you so much, Stu, for contacting me. I really do hope that, you know, there's enough there for you guys to get your teeth into.
Plenty. And if you're happy for me to do so when this comes out, I'll tag you in it so people can go and find out more about your music if they've not heard the new album and such.
Please do. Yeah. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for taking me on memory lane.
Thank you. There you go. How cool was Marina? That was such a good chat. We carried on nattering after our press stop, which is always a sign that it's been a good podcast. And yeah, it was really, really nice chatting. I hope you all enjoyed it. As mentioned at the beginning, if you did, then go and have a look in the archives, because there's over 160 episodes now of this podcast. And, you know, we've some of the most incredible guests, you know, some amazing musicians and producers, DJs, actors, you know, stand-ups. Go and have a rummage in the vaults and see what you can find. I'm sure you'll find something that will tickle your fancy. I'm done. I'm back next week. Remember, everything you need to know, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. See you next time. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network, with me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.